You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks, we go back to the movies once again, and we are now looking at the long-awaited sequel to Blade Runner. Can you believe it? They made a sequel to Blade Runner. They've been talking about it for years, but Blade Runner 2049 has hit the screens, and we went to the movies to go see it. And did we like it? Did we not? Was it a worthy successor of the classic 35-year-old movie? Well, we're going to have to wait to talk all about it. And Mr. Mike Gordon here went to go see it also. And so let's say hi to him right now. Hey, Mr. Mike.
Howdy.
How are you, my friend?
I am peachy keen. And yourself?
I'm doing good. Been better for some things, but overall, I'm doing really peachy, as you like to say.
Yes, absolutely.
We went to a movie. We had to sit in the movie for 2 hours and 45 minutes.
It's a long movie.
Oh, God, yes. I almost felt like they needed an intermission or something like that.
Back in the old days, that's what they would have done.
Exactly. People had...
These days, I have to make my own intermission.
Exactly. I guess people in the old days had weaker bladders or something like that.
I guess so.
So we, of course, are going to talk all about the movie. And if you haven't seen it...
How exciting! Spoilers!
So, go off, go to the movies, we'll wait here, you know, we're not doing anything else.
We'll wait here 3 hours.
Exactly, we'll wait, you know, time's clicking now, go ahead. But for all of you who have seen it already, hi, thanks for talking with us. And we're going to talk about a couple other things before we get into the movie segment. Of course, the show is brought to you by the Amazon link on our website. You can go to esopodcast.com/ESO Amazon, or just go to the website and click on the Amazon link at the top, and you could go right there, bookmark it. Every time you go there, you can shop for Halloween stuff. You can still get Halloween costumes. You can get all kinds of really neat candy deals. That's right, folks. You can order your Halloween candy from Amazon, or in Mike's case, you could buy little tiny comic books through Amazon, too. So it's actually kind of fun, and, you know, or you could do like my dentist did, and he gave out toothbrushes. You could do that also through Amazon.
And his house got egged.
He was the TP. he was the TP house. That's right.
But you can get TP and can you get eggs at Amazon?
Yeah, they do. They do. All right. They own Whole Foods now, so of course they can.
Yeah. So all your trick or treat needs.
Exactly. The only thing they don't do is the dog poop in the bag, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
We don't do that yet.
They don't do that yet.
Exactly. We don't endorse that here on the network. Nope. We do not. But you know, of course, we want to hear from you. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. Or 404-963-9057. Leave a message for us on our voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. We have a feedback line. Leave us feedback. We really want to hear from you. So, this last week, we're going to do Rants and Raves, and we're joined for this segment by Michelle. Hey, Michelle, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Michelle's usually has just a segment on the show, but she's joining us for the whole Rants and Raves section because we got a lot of music stuff to talk about.
A lot of iconic rock stuff to talk about.
Exactly.
Indeed.
So thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So the first little bit of music news, we had some really weird news last week, right around when we were recording, and so we didn't really want to talk about it yet because there was no confirmation about the passing of Tom Petty. And, you know, it took everyone by surprise. He was, what, 67?
66. He would have turned 67 on the 20th of this month.
Okay, that's what I thought. And he basically, you know, started hitting the news right around early afternoon, East Coast time, on last Monday, that Tom Petty had passed away, that he had a massive heart attack Sunday night, and they found him in his studio in Hawaii, and he was unconscious, and they put him on life support and such. And reports were starting to say that he passed on. But there was no full confirmation from the Tom Petty camp. And then finally, the next morning on Tuesday, his publicist came out and said that Tom did pass after, you know, them trying to do all the heroic needs they did, and they took him off life support and see what they could do. And basically, he was brain dead, and they let him pass. But man, that was a pretty big blow, you know, for rock fans out there. You know, Tom, you know, he was a rocker. He was, you know, from the late 70s on, he was, you know, was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
And to say that his music is the soundtrack of a lot of people's lives, it is such a cliche, but it is so very, very true.
Very much so. And it's interesting because Tom's, you know, he was all the way for me through high school and into college. And it was, you know, everything from, you know, American Girl all the way through, you know, Don't Come Around Here No More. And then, you know, work like that. And, you know, Free Falling and Learning to Fly. And, you know, you could name on and on the Tom Petty hits. And it's just amazing how much he did have success up until probably, you know, the last couple of years. And he was still touring.
Yeah, he had, he and the Heartbreakers had just wrapped up a...
They called it 40th anniversary
tour? 40th anniversary, I think it was 50-date tour. And the last show had been, it was 2 weeks ago, it was a week prior to his passing, at the Hollywood Bowl. And a lot of that footage has showed up on YouTube. And an overjoyed crowd, a relaxed band totally in the groove. I obviously didn't know Tom Petty, but from everything I've seen in the last week, his last interview and the footage I've seen and the pictures, I think he was wonderfully in a good place. He really did seem happy and secure and comfortable with his place in the world and with the music he was making.
Didn't he say that was probably going to be their last big tour, that they'd probably play some dates here and there, but he just wanted to sort of just relax and spend time with the grandkids? And
yeah. kind of one of those sad twists of fate that he came off the road to spend some time with family and only had that last week.
But he was, I mean, and I didn't know this, this kind of came out too, where he was, you know, pretty rough shape during the tour. I mean, his hip basically was really damaged. And I think, you know, apart from the times he was on stage, he was pretty much being wheeled around. So he's been in some pretty rough shape. But still, those last shows that he did, nobody could tell. I mean, once he was on stage, you couldn't tell that there was anything wrong with him. So, I can't say that I'm the biggest Tom Petty fan, and I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, but yet there are songs of his that I absolutely do love, that just, like, there were songs that just sort of transcended pop culture, and whether you they're just there, you know, they're sort of like, you know, whether you like them or not, you can't even really decide whether there's no decision of whether they're good songs, bad songs. They're just there. And and I find myself, since he's passed, different Tom Petty songs hit my, like, you know, get stuck in my head. I find myself humming, you know, whether it's Free Fallin' or Running Down a Dream or Refugee, or, you know, like, there's just Stop Dragging My Heart. Like, there's just tons of songs that he's responsible for. I mean, I think, was he a first ballot Hall of Famer? He must have been.
Yes, he was. Yeah. 2002.
Yeah, so there was no question that he was a Hall of Famer. And, you know, his work with the Wilburys was especially of note. I think he was the youngest Wilbur.
I think he was.
I think a little bit younger than Jeff Lynne, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I think Jeff Lynne is 68.
So just under.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, there's big jam up in heaven these days. It just keeps, like, that band just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Well, as we like to say, now put some salt around Bob Dylan and Jeff Lynne, you know, the last two surviving members of the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, very sad news because it was really sudden. Yeah, no one expected that. And I think even, you know, I could tell the people when we heard about it at work, you know, that day at the day job, people were affected. I mean, it's just a name that everybody knows and they were just sorry to see go.
Exactly. And, you know, for, you know, those who don't know Tom Petty, I'm sure you know songs by him. You've heard him on the radio. You've heard him on movies or, you know, even iconic movies like Silence of the Lambs. He was in it. You know, his music American Girl was right in the very beginning of the movie. And so, yeah, you definitely have throughout motion picture, TV, and, you know, Tom was not afraid to basically get out there and let his music be heard by all masses. And definitely worth checking out his stuff if you haven't heard it before. But
something I've forgotten, until today I was reminded that he was the voice of Lucky, Luann's husband on King of the Hill.
Oh, right. I forgot he did a voice on King of the Hill.
And he also had the obligatory little turn as himself on The Simpsons.
Oh, everyone's had a turn.
Yeah, yeah.
On The Simpsons, has been on so long enough, it's like a who's who of the music industry.
That's when you know you've made it.
Yes, you've made it.
No, he made it when Weird Al parodied one of his songs.
That's true. And he didn't get upset about it.
Nope, exactly. And he was pretty cool about it. So, rest on Tom Petty, and we had mentioned earlier, now onto a little more positive stuff, we were going to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the nominations.
And we didn't bring Michelle on just to talk about, like, bad news.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not going to call her bad news, Michelle. You know, we don't want to do that, you know.
I don't do that.
No, there's some actually really awesome news. We had the nominations for the 2018 class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes, we have ourselves a ballot.
Yay! So who do we got this year?
This is announced last Thursday. We have another bumper crop. We've got 19 names on this ballot. It's a very deep, very, very good ballot. But it's also got some bizarre little choices. And just speaking for me personally, it has the makings of my own personal nightmare scenario that Mike is praying does not happen, because it's going to be ugly round in here if it comes to pass.
Oh, good Lord.
Mm-hmm. Should we go one by one and talk about it?
Let's go through this in alphabetical order.
I do want to hear after we're done what your nightmare scenario is. Okay.
I think that'll be clear while we're talking about each one, but we'll go ahead.
In alphabetical order, we have Bon Jovi.
Oh, I thought they were in already.
No, as a matter of fact, John Bon Jovi was very vocal last year about there were two guys blocking his way into the hall, and he called them choice names when he saw them, and he has a beef with some guys at the hall, and they'll never let me in, but nope. They turn the other cheek, and he's on the ballot. And they right now are the runaway leaders. Doesn't even do it justice. The Bon Jovi fans are going just out of their minds, and they're in the lead in the fan vote by a huge margin.
Well, and I would also say that out of everybody on this list, they are probably the most popular act. I mean, as far as being able to sell. Even able to sell out like huge crowds.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, yeah. I mean, stadiums will be sold out with them. You know, the others might sell out here and there, but Bon Jovi, if you want like a stadium to sell out, I think they still will. I don't know.
Well, but, I know Richie and John aren't really, you know, performing anymore together.
Yeah, but they haven't done that in years.
From what I've heard, they have. But well. I take that back. I don't know what if John has said anything. I heard Sambora has said, of course, I'm open to coming back. And so we'll see if they can bury the hatchet.
Yeah.
And John's back, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, Bon Jovi, I think there's a good chance he would. Is this his first nomination or?
I think it's at least their second.
Okay.
I think it's the second.
Yeah, it's not their first.
Okay.
They will win the fan vote, and on the strength of that, they will be in.
Okay.
I'll tell you right now, they're in.
Okay. Period. All right.
Moving on.
Let's move on.
Kate Bush.
I'm all for Kate.
Yeah, somewhat unexpected, a very, very good choice.
Well, I think, and I'm not trying to be sexist here by any means, I think each year they should have at least one female go in. Like last year, what was it, Joan Baez?
Yes.
And there's plenty of female performers out there who deserve to be in there who have not even been nominated yet, who've been performing for 50 years and such.
Undoubtedly.
And
I think the only reason that she's on the ballot, I think this is just a ploy to get her to play in the States. She doesn't like playing live. She doesn't like.
I'm not sure she'll even do it for them.
She hasn't played in the States in ages. I think people are just like, anybody who's voting for her is like, I just want to see her play in the States.
No, I understand that.
A couple of months ago, Mike and I were talking, and I told him that Pat Benatar had covered Wuthering Heights, which he didn't know. This spun me off into a wild fantasy of Kate and Pat being inducted together and duetting on Wuthering Heights, which
would be amazing.
It would be amazing.
The fact that Pat Benatar is not on this list and is not yet in the Hall of Fame is just a travesty, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, we'll get there. But I think it's worthy for Kate Bush to be in because she was just such an innovator of what she did. She was performance art. She was pure magic to see her perform either her videos or live because she took performance art to a new level. She was a dancer. She was an actress. She was a choreographer. It was just amazing seeing her up on stage. You know?
Yes, and nobody like her.
Mm-hmm. And truthfully, you know, if you've ever seen Wuthering Heights video, it's just amazing. And there was a anniversary video that some people did about 5 years ago or so of this whole field of people dressed as her in honor, male and female, doing the...
Apparently, that's an annual thing in Atlanta.
Is it?
Yes. We have to go to the next one.
Oh, we will be there. ESO will cover it. Oh, that is awesome.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that is cool. So, you know, all right. So I definitely think that she should be in.
I do too.
All right, next.
Moving on. Oh, some band from Boston called The Cars. I don't know anything about them.
This is their third year, isn't it?
It's their third time. Hoping third time is the charm.
Yeah, this is Michelle's baby.
This is my project.
So this is and yeah, look, I think everybody thinks they should get in. I don't know what the holdup is, but
they've been the last 2 years. They have been on extremely strong ballots. I think most people like them and feel they should be in, but they've always ended up the official ballot. You're asked to vote for five. And I think they've been everybody's number six for the past 2 years. So here's hoping.
Sometimes, you know, three is a lucky number.
Yeah.
Maybe
what it was for. Yes. So
yeah, that's true. And I think the Cars deserve to be in. I know you guys love, cause you guys are, especially Mike from Boston, and I know, Michelle, you just love The Cars. So I don't see why they shouldn't be in, considering some of the bands that have gotten in the last couple years. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Plus, right now, the hall is really anti-New Age and alternative. Like they just nobody from that kind of style of music has got in yet.
So no Enya. Okay, got it.
Right. Well, no. I mean, no, like Smiths, no Nine Inch Nails, no Cure, no like that stuff. Even though it's really important, and we're coming on like being that stuff. Those bands are eligible, as we're about to see with the next band we're going to talk about. But I think the Cars is essential getting in to open up that door. Like once the Cars get in, then all of a sudden you're going to, maybe that's why they're hesitant, because once the Cars get in, then you can allow a whole wave of of new age and alternative music to come in.
Well, they would be once again performing the role that they played in pop music history when they came on the scene. A lot of people credited the Cars for turning people on, for making new wave accessible to the mainstream. They were the gateway drug to...
Yeah, new wave. I'm sorry. I think I said new age, but yeah. that's different.
Yeah, new. That's why I said any of Mr. Mike.
Yeah, I was sitting here going, what?
Sorry. But it's interesting because I think the Cars should get in just because of popularity, and they did some very milestone things in the early 80s. It's just great stuff. And like you,
late 70s, man.
That's true. They did start in the late 70s, and it's just amazing to see if they get in, you know, what it will open to. Because, you know, I think from that era, I think Talking Heads is one of the only ones that have gotten in.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're Blondie. Right there. Yeah. Yeah. And Blondie. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's time. I definitely,
yeah.
Do. Well, that's all. They're definitely in the that's corner. also the music we grew up with. So. You know.
Yeah.
So, all right, who do we got next?
Depeche Mode.
This makes me feel old.
Yeah. Well, just what we were talking about, new wave, right there. Right. They've been.
I like Depeche Mode a lot, but I don't. You know, since the Smiths didn't get in, since Nine Inch Nails haven't gotten in, I don't.
Kraftwerk.
Yeah, okay. I don't expect Depeche Mode to get in. Should they get in? I think maybe some other bands should get in before them that sort of have paved the way, like the Cars, like maybe Roxy Music. You know, certainly they're a main force in alternative music. You can't deny that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I definitely think Depeche Mode has been a very long-lasting careers, and a lot of people consider them, you know, fathers of British, you know, new wave, and you know the syntho rock, as they used to call it, and or hair rock or whatever they called it, the new wave stuff. So I definitely think, you know, Depeche Mode, possibly. I definitely think they might have a possibility this year. Who do we got next?
Dire Straits was a little bit of a surprise.
First, definitely, I think they'll be in.
First time on the ballot.
They'll be in this year, hands down. Mark Knopfler, it's basically Mark Knopfler's band.
Yeah.
And he had a revolving cast around him. But, you know, I think Dire Straits definitely, just on Mark Knopfler himself, I think will be definitely a first ballot nominee, and they will get in. You can disagree if you don't think so, but...
No, I think...
I'm just honestly not sure.
Yeah, I can't... I can't deny them. I mean, they're a good rock act. They've had a few hits. Obviously, they were influential. So, and they're the kind of band that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame really loves. So, like, I can, they're part of that. I don't want to say clique, but they're part of that whole group, you know, where I could definitely see them getting in. They seem to belong there. So I don't have anything against them. Their music is solid enough and their history is solid enough. So I don't have anything against them.
Okay. I think Dire Straits for me is a give me.
But I think I'm shared with Michelle's amazement that they are like a solid number two as far as the fan vote, right?
No, they were overtaken last night by the Moody Blues.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Well, let's go on to the next one then.
Eurythmics. Very good choice. Strong female voice. Innovative. Dave Stewart has worked with everyone in the industry. I don't know if this is their year, but highly regarded. And they will be in.
Eventually.
Rather than later. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think, because Kate Bush is in, and I think she'll get in for the female portion. I think you're right about Dave Stewart, and Annie Lennox is awesome. You know. Don't get me wrong. I just don't see them getting in this year. I could see next year.
They're definitely the 80s version of Captain and Tennille.
Oh, no. No.
Come on.
No.
You look at them and
Mike Gordon. No. For everyone who wants to write ESOpodcast@gmail.com, address it to Mike Gordon. He said that.
They are another one that, again, talking about the new wave. See, I got it right this time. They're that style. But they were beyond that. They were more than that. And certainly, both of them extremely talented and very influential as well. I mean, how many covers do we have of Sweet Dreams?
Marilyn Manson was singing Sweet Dreams when that piece of set prop fell on him and took him out.
So that alone, no, just kidding, should get them in the Hall of Fame.
Well, exactly.
No, but I mean, that song alone has mm-hmm. influenced so many folks. So, yeah.
No, I definitely think they might be a surprise and get in this year, but I'm not 100% sure on that one. So who do we got next?
J. Geils Band. I think it's their fifth time on the ballot.
I don't see it.
I don't see it happening either. I should like them more than I do. I kind of like them, but it's not a big deal to me.
I love them. I mean, they're a Boston band. I love them. They're a solid band, but with their history and everything, I mean, look, if you want a band to come and just play down the house, they will do that. They will make everybody move and shake and they can put on a show.
It would be totally awesome.
But I'll tell you what, if they get in, it's because I think, and the reason, look, it's just like Chic, right? Chic was on the ballot for the longest time because they wanted Nile Rodgers in, right? J. Geils is on the ballot five times now because the powers that be really want Peter Wolf in there. Because Peter Wolf is so regarded among musicians as he's a musician's musician, right? He's a guy that everybody loves. I mean, he was really good friends with Tom Petty. So I think this is in honor of Peter. Like, Peter doesn't have enough in his own cred to warrant being on the in as a ballot, but J. Geils does. So I think, as long as they want Peter to get in, J. Geils is always going to be on the ballot, just like Chic was.
Yeah, I don't, but I don't see it again this year. I really don't.
I don't either,
but it would be so cool to have for Peter Labuda at the. That would make just the whole night.
Open up the hall and let me in!
Oh, man. Okay, we're falling apart here, folks. Let's keep trekking along.
A little love for the metal genre at last. Judas Priest, godfathers of the genre, put them in. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but I have been hoping for a nomination for a long time, and it finally happened.
I love Judas Priest. I love a lot of their different songs they've done. And, you know, hey, the lead singer has a leather fetish. You know, he can't.
Well, they're widely credited for being responsible for the way metal looks.
Oh, very much, very much so.
Studs and leather.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. And, you know, they had a band, you know, the band lead singer quit and they had somebody else take over who they even got even more successful with. And it was just, you know, Judas Priest is, you know, one of those that just kept on going and going and going. Maybe this year, but if not, I think next year.
Hopefully. Love to see it happen.
Yes. Okay.
Doing a little flip. Next one up is LL Cool J, somebody that Dr. Dre says should be in before anybody else. Or at least any other rapper. He is the next logical choice in hip hop. And I personally, we went through this last year. I'm fine with hip hop. Mike, not so much, but I think it's rock and roll's cousin and they belong at the table. And LL Cool J was one of the pioneers of the genre. He's going to be a Kennedy Center honoree.
Okay.
I'm honestly not sure it's going to happen this year. We may have a year without a hip hop, inductee, but, it's kind of getting imperative for him to get in because there's others waiting at the door like Dre and A Tribe Called Quest, and we haven't really honored any female rappers yet. We haven't honored Queen Latifah. We haven't honored Salt-N-Pepa. So,
right.
Kind of getting dicey for for James, but hoping it happens.
There's a good possibility at it. We'll have to wait and see. But LL Cool J, yeah, probably this year. I'd probably say I don't see why they wouldn't. But, you know, how is he in the voting right now?
He's, I think, in 10th or 11th place, but that's the fan vote. All we have to go by is the fan vote.
Oh, I know, which is very minuscule with counting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so, yeah, we forgot to mention that, folks. Yeah, you get to vote, but it only counts oh so much for it. All right,
yeah, who else? I'll summarize that when we're done. The next one up is Return to the Ballot, second year in a row, the MC5 out of Detroit. A lot of people don't know who they are, but they actually are considered forerunners of metal, and they're also one of the most political bands on the ballot.
Yeah, I've heard of them, but I don't know enough about them to say yeah or nay.
That's why they're not getting in.
Yeah, exactly.
People don't know who they are.
Okay, let's go. Keep on going.
Someone else with an even worse identity crisis for at least the public. The Meters out of New Orleans. For a long time, they were Alan Toussaint's house band. They are massively influential on funk music. They've been around for like 40 some odd years. I mean, one of the longest careers on this whole ballot. In New Orleans, they are household names. And I'm not sure how many times they've been on the ballot, but this is at least the second time I've seen them, and they struggle at the bottom every time. So it's nice for them to be recognized, but it's not going to happen this year, and I'm not sure that it will at all.
You don't think so? Do bands actually fall off?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know, I mean, look, Janet fell off. Janet Jackson. She was on the ballot a couple of years, and now she's not this year. I mean, obviously, she'll probably come back at some point, but we don't know that.
Right.
Yeah. The Replacements were nominated once and haven't been again. Obviously somebody on the nominating committee thinks very highly of them, so they might pop up repeatedly, but so far the voting committee and the public,
not so much.
They're not buying it.
Yep.
Okay, what do we got next?
The Moody Blues.
Michelle's favorite band.
My favorite band in the whole world.
She doesn't like them. She can't stand them. But look, I dig them. I think they I can see where they could get in.
They're getting in.
So they're number two, and I guess yeah, they are number two on the fan vote. They've been, I don't know. I definitely think that they're unique enough that with their sound and everything like that and if they weren't going to get in, like it's, you know, if they just died quietly in the 70s or whatever, then I think that would be one thing. But then they came back in the 80s and were just stronger than ever. I think they're going to get in.
Oh, they're getting in. They're considered the biggest snub in Hall history at this point.
So. Well, I consider them the ELO of this year's run. And pretty much they were very innovative, especially what they did. After their initial release, you know, they sounded very poppy at first, but then they started experimenting and they did the whole Nights in White Satin, Tuesday Afternoon, and that era, then Ride My Seesaw. You know, they have a whole library and they're still touring today, folks. Yeah, they never stopped pretty much. And
you know, and I know Michelle's really going to hate me for saying this, but Nights in White Satin is one of those songs like Bohemian Rhapsody that has this cult status that just marks it, like, and people love it because it's so unique.
Well, like, yeah, it's definitely
does have a beautiful voice. I'll say that.
Oh yeah, and I definitely think, yeah, I think they're pretty much a given this year, especially where they are in the fan voting. All right, yeah. Who else do we got?
Radiohead.
Ooh, talk about, they're actually post new wave, actually.
Yeah, they are. I'm like, yeah, shouldn't we let some new wave ones get in before them? But they're a musician band, you know, and they've got like a huge underground following. I think they had very few like pop hits, But, you know, as far as album sales and the way they're regarded, live shows, etc., I think there's enough love there that they're going to get in. I wouldn't even be surprised if they got in, like, you know, sort of like Green Day, where they just get in the first time.
Oh, they, for 2 years, everyone has said that they're a lock for this year.
Mm-hmm.
For this year's lock, so.
Well, the thing is, though, with Radiohead, they don't even really care if they're in or not. That's, you know, I've heard interviews with, like, the lead singer and most of the band. I think there's only one member of them that said, yeah, it'd be great to be in the hall. It'd be a great honor. The rest of them were like, eh, whatever. Mm-hmm. So. All right, who we got next?
Rage Against the Machine.
Ooh, I am not a fan.
I dig them. And I, you know, I think that, like, at the time they were huge and the message that they were sending, you know, a lot of their songs really meant something, on the social political stand. I dig them, but I don't know enough about them to know, you know, if how influential they were, et cetera, et cetera. I, you know, I think they were an influence to bands that came after them. They certainly were big at the time, but I don't know. That's about the extent of my knowledge. And they're on the, you know, they're on the Crow soundtrack. So anybody's on the Crow soundtrack should get in.
I don't see them getting in this year, though.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not.
No.
There are definitely more worthy candidates this year, I think.
Okay. Next, Michelle.
Rufus featuring Chaka Khan. Last year, and I think the year before, Chaka was on as a solo artist. Now they're going back to Rufus, which they've done before. They're trying one thing and then the other. I don't see it happening this year, but they are a very good band.
Okay. I would love to see Rufus get in finally, because they were fairly groundbreaking for what they were doing in the early 70s. I think, you know, just on merit alone, I think they should be in, but depends on the voters. Yeah. All right, what do we got next?
Nina Simone.
Ooh. Is this her first year?
Yes.
Wow.
I am one of the few people that has come out to say this. The press is full of people saying it's a crime she hasn't been in already. She deserves to be in there. My personal feeling is they should have just put her in as an early influencer of musical excellence. She is a mesmerizing performer. She is magnificent. There are not words to describe the brilliance of Nina Simone, but to me, she is not a rock performer.
Okay.
And I would have kept her above the ballot and just ushered her in and used the ballot spot for someone performing in the rock or R&B genre. And you were saying Kate Bush would get in. Nina Simone is getting in.
Okay, so you have two females this year.
I don't think you think Kate's going to get in.
I don't believe Kate will get in.
Wow. Wow.
So if you had to put money on any woman getting in, it would be Nina?
Nina is going in.
Okay.
I promise you.
All right. Let's keep going.
Okay. This one is really important. Sister Rosetta Tharpe. And as far as I'm concerned, nobody should be inducted until this woman is in. And again, I don't understand why they put her on the ballot. She should have gone in as an early influence, just ushered on in. So I'm not sure why she's on the ballot, but if we go another year and she's left off, it's a travesty. This Sister Rosetta is the godmother of rock and roll. She influenced everybody from Little Richard to Bob Dylan to Johnny Cash to Elvis Presley, and this is her first time being mentioned by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, and definitely. I think she should be in. It's an honor for her to be in.
It's yes. Everybody should be grateful to be on this ballot with her.
It's about damn time.
Exactly.
I mean, so, she needs to go right in.
And I think that's what will probably, a lot of people think that's what will happen. And it's probably softening her in the fan vote a little bit, but that's okay. A lot of people expect that after the vote's all over, she'll just be named an early influence anyway. We'll see if that happens. One way or another, I'll take it. Just put the woman in.
Okay. Who do we got next? We're running low on time.
Link Ray.
Who?
Link Ray.
Exactly.
Who?
Link Ray is, he's gotten some press in the last year. This is not his first time on the ballot, but he's got a higher profile this year because he was in a documentary that came out last year called Rumble, the Indian, oh gosh, exact title. The Indians, oh crud. I'm sorry, I'm blowing the exact title, but it's about Native Americans in rock and roll. And Link Ray was part Cherokee, I believe. He had an instrumental in the 50s called Rumble. It's the only instrumental to be banned for fear it would cause juvenile delinquency. When people are afraid of your instrumentals, you're a badass, okay? he was one of the first guitarists to use reverb. Guitarists to this day honor him, and he really does belong in, but I have a feeling he might get in, but I wouldn't call it a sure thing.
Okay.
And the last one are the Zombies. This is a repeat trip to the ballot for them. They've had an exhibit at the hall this past year.
Some people think they already in. They're already in.
Yeah, it's one of those bands you kind of think would be in already.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'm kind of like, you know, they basically only had that one hit. She's Not There.
Time of the Season.
Two hits. Okay.
Odyssey and Oracle is considered one of the great rock albums. So I just don't know if it's enough.
Yeah, I'm kind of confused by that they're doing that for them. I like the songs, but I don't think they're really, I don't see them getting in this year.
Yeah, it's kind of soft, but I will tell you that I'll give you four names. I'm hoping that they induct six like they did last year and not be stingy with the five, but I'll tell you four of the names right now. Radiohead, Bon Jovi, The Moody Blues, and Nina Simone.
Okay.
The other name or two names could be from almost anywhere on this ballot. There's probably six or seven names that it could be. So that's how good of a ballot it really is. And you wanted to know what my personal nightmare scenario was. If some people might be able to guess already, but if Bon Jovi and the Moody's go in before the Cars, we're going to need more house repairs around here.
Yep.
Uh-oh. Watch out, Mike. She's going to be throwing her hook around.
Yeah, that's why people need to go out and vote.
Yes, vote, folks. And Michelle, where can people vote?
People can vote at rockhall.com.
Yay. That is
you
awesome.
You can vote once per 24-hour period with an email and or Facebook account from now through December 5th. And the ballot should be announced probably the day or two after that. And the ceremony will be next April 14th in Cleveland.
And we'll have you back on to discuss, hopefully, some good news with as far as the nominees.
It's going to be a heck of a podcast if it's not good news.
Oh, yeah. We'll be. I guess I'll have my finger on the beep button.
We need to get station insurance.
Exactly.
I've invested in a bleep button.
Yes. Oh, we already have a new bleep button. So, you know, we have Darren on the show. Of course we have a bleep button. What do you mean? Well, thank you very much, Michelle. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with our review of Blade Runner.
My name is Brian Foster.
Everything you know is wrong. Got that?
Now, the reason that I'm calling is because I have begun to suspect you don't have any ladybugs in your freezer.
Hey, cuz, Roy here. So about your car.
The darkness was never empty.
There's this presence in my head. I'm pretty sure that the book was confiscated by cats.
You're damn right we find a lot of bodies when Foster is around.
And some people call me the Night Blogger.
I thought you might be able to help me with the case. Any idea where I could find him?
Your police plan on taking me in.
I would much prefer that to the alternative.
Every leap of civilization was built off the back of slaves. Replicants are the future, but I can only make so many. I have the lock, and he has the key. I think I found him.
That's not possible. If this gets out, we've bought ourselves a war.
You're a cop. I did your job once.
Things were simpler then.
What do you want?
I want to ask you some questions. What happened?
I covered my tracks. Scrambled the records.
We were being hunted.
By who?
They know you're here. You do not know what pain is yet. You will learn. Bring it to me.
This breaks the world.
We have to go.
I'm coming with you.
Where is he?
The future of the species is finally unearthed.
Hey everyone, it is time for our movie segment. And yes, folks, we went to go see Blade Runner 2049. And we sat in the movies for 2 hours and 40 some odd minutes. It's been a while since I've actually seen a movie that long. At the theaters, actually. You know, I've watched documentaries at home. I've watched, you know, miniseries or, you know, power watched, you know, a season of The Tick or something like that. But sitting and watching a movie for that long. Wow. And such an intense film. So we are going to talk all about it. And we've got a great crew joining me and Mike. We are going to be joined, of course, ladies first, our movie gal, Ashley Pauls, is here.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
Hey, Ashley, and great job on your review on the website.
Oh, thank you. I'm super excited to talk about this with everybody tonight.
It is good to have you because, you know, you missed out on our Kingsman episode because you just had a touch of the stomach flu.
Yes, that was not very fun, but I'm thankfully back and feeling better now.
The movie wasn't fun or the stomach flu?
Well. Probably a whole nother conversation, but
okay, let's keep moving on. We also have Felicity, the mayor of Chicken Town herself from the Flopcast, is here.
Hi everybody.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be back.
It's great to have you. And we are joined once again by Jay Shearer. Welcome, Jay.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
You want to plug your podcast real quick?
Oh, yeah. We're the Story Geeks podcast, and we talk about stuff like this, and we dive really deep, and we ask people like Mike Gordon really deep questions, and we make them answer them. So it's always fun.
Mike Gordon answers deep questions? Wow. Wow, that's a side of him I've never seen.
You know, it is an interesting change of pace. I can't promise anybody that we're going to go that deep into this, but boy, we're going to try.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm shocked you didn't say boy howdy, you know? Wow. So let's dive in. And like we gave at the beginning of the show, we are going to spoil the hell out of this movie. So if you haven't seen it, why are you listening? Come on. All right, let's dive in. This is a new look at the same world that we saw 35 years ago. It is, of course, many years later, and the world is even more dystopian than it was before. It is grander. They went more out of the cities, and you just learned more about this place, and a place that I truthfully would not want to live in. It was just, wow. I don't even know where to begin.
I don't know what everybody's baggage is with the first one, and whether everybody likes it or not, but I find it interesting that when I was watching the first one, because I rewatched the first one in preparation for watching this one, and I've seen it a million times. It's one of my favorite movies, so this was a really important sequel for me, a follow-up. It dawned on me when I was watching the first one, I'm like, okay, so Blade Runner, the original, takes place in 2019, which is just 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. At the time, I think we all thought it was pretty visionary and stylistic, but we also thought it was pretty, quote unquote, realistic in its depiction of how the future might look. But obviously, we're almost there now, and it's not really that close in a lot of ways. There doesn't seem to be as much of a jump from 2019 to 2049, and there's some story reasons for that, but do you guys feel like this is accurate depiction of what the future might be, or is this now completely fantasy?
I think more fantasy now, and in some ways, politically and revolutionary, possibly that's the direction we can handle. Technology-wise, I don't think we're going to be even that close by 2049. We talked about it when we did our panel at Dragon Con, how this is the dredges of society now living on Earth. All the uppity-ups were off planet, and they talked more about that in this. And it was just more apparent, and you got to see the world more in this one than you have before. You learned more about the history of the planet than you ever did in the first movie.
What do you think, Ashley? Because I know that, okay, so you're the youngest one here. Obviously, we like to bring up that point over and over again. was the first one powerful enough for you as far as the environment, the setting that it's in?
Well, actually, I have been wanting to revisit the first one, especially now that I've seen the sequel. I happened to watch it when I was going through a period of really bad insomnia. So definitely not the best time in your life to watch this really deep sci-fi film. So I kind of had a little bit of a hard time tracking with it, and I kind of forgotten a lot of the plot, actually, so I had to quickly look at Wikipedia before I went to see Blade Runner 2049. It struck me as significant at the time, but it didn't really click with me as much as I kind of wish it would have. But now, like the sequel, I thought this was just such a powerful film. I was really into it and really engrossed the whole runtime, even though it was a long movie. So now I'd very much like to go back and revisit the sequel and hopefully be able to draw more from it now.
Interesting. Wow, cool. Felicity, what about you?
Like you, I had seen the original many times, and I just watched it again Friday night, actually, more for Kevin's benefit than mine, because he'd only seen it once. And I was struck by kind of the very deliberate pace of the first film, and expected this movie to be a lot faster paced, being, you know, somewhat of an action movie. And it really wasn't, obviously. It was long. And I think, you know, I have to say it didn't completely hold my attention through the whole length, but looking back, there's nothing I would have really cut out of it. I think that it's, you know, it's a very involving story. I was just it wasn't quite what I expected based on the trailers, but I think it was a very good film. And I don't know if it's going to reward multiple viewings like the original film did, but I'd certainly like to see it again.
I agree with that. I think it'd be interesting to see how this movie would hold up second viewing and to see what I've missed or what can be added to it. And God help us if there's a director's cut.
What about you, Jay?
You know, I think it's a really interesting question. Like, what is the future? What could the future hold? I think it's a bit tough to answer that question only because it's such a dystopian future, even in 2019, that it doesn't seem, in some ways, it seems the technology is pushed farther. And we go like, I don't know if like in 30 years or whatever, we could accomplish those things. But in some ways, it actually feels like they could have gone. It doesn't feel like they're trying to rise up out of the issues that they've created. They seem to kind of be stuck in the same issues they've created. So I don't know. I did like the fact that they introduced some new concepts, they introduced some new areas. The fact that there's like a wall preventing the ocean from like overtaking the city is like really fantastic and interesting given what we're faced with climate change and things like that. So
and I you're like out there on that side. So you're all for the wall, right? That's a wall you can be for.
We need the wall. In fact, we probably need a bigger one because we have North Korea to worry about over here too.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it's one of those weird things because I was thinking about it and I'm like, you know, in some ways I'm like, you know, obviously I'm glad that certain things didn't turn out the way that they turned out in Blade Runner, the first one. And in other ways, I feel like, you know, we failed because there's a lot of things that we should have, like, obviously, when Ridley Scott and them made the movie and they said it in 2019, they were probably thinking, okay, that's enough time that we should be able to do some of these things, like go off world and do a lot, you know, have this technology to create replicants and stuff like that. And yet we're not, I mean, we're kind of getting there, but we're slowly getting to some of that stuff. So it's very like, so a lot of these things that are, there's still really these questions about artificial life and what that means is something that we can all still continue to discuss, but it's not as relevant as I think maybe they thought it was going to be when they made the first Blade Runner. Like they thought, oh, surely by now, you know, that'll be a big question that they'll be talking about around 2019, but not so much unless we're talking about Westworld. Then everybody's talking about that.
Well, the thing is, there is, you know, there is artificial intelligence now. And they're trying to stop it in a lot of ways before it gets out of hand. The thing is, they haven't made the replicants to be able to, the bodies to be able to do that yet. The technology for us is not there yet.
Yeah. I think what we see in this film with Joy is probably a more realistic thing that we could achieve. You know, the imaginary girlfriend that Kay has.
Yes. Yeah, but that's Siri, you know, it's really Siri it's, taken to the next level.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's interesting
literally.
That she herself seemed to exhibit, you know, signs of independence and signs of consciousness, and it's hard to tell. You know, on first viewing, I don't know if I picked up on everything. That would be interesting to revisit. You know, whether she really is developing some sort of consciousness herself, or whether that's all just part of the program.
Yeah, to me, that was one of the most interesting aspects of the film was first, you know, it doesn't only explore are replicants human or not, they look human, but then is this artificial intelligence like Joy, how human is she? And I like that they kind of delved into it, but left it a little ambiguous, like at the very end when she tells him that she loves him right before she dies, does she actually die? Or is that just her program being erased? Does she actually mean the things she says, or is this just a part of the computer code? So I kind of like that they took it a level further beyond, you know, how human are the replicants to like how human is this artificial intelligence like Joy. And I kind of like that they didn't answer it, just kind of left that open for people to discuss.
It's interesting though, because we're not looking at a relationship between a simulation, a program and a human. We're looking at a relationship between a replicant and a simulated program. So between Joe and Joy, we're looking at that relationship. So it's like, is that a different dynamic than you know, if Joe were human, which we learn pretty quickly that he's not, which was, I like the fact that, you know, there's no mystery there. Like within the first 5 minutes, it's like, okay, Jay is a replicant. So that's cool. We don't have to have that cloud hanging over us, which we still do over Harrison. So we'll get to that, I'm sure, in a little bit. But it was really nice that they made that clarification. Although obviously, you know, there's a lot of things about his programming that he seems to exceed. I certainly believe that when he's told by the lieutenant there to delete everything and to wipe that out, I don't think he does that. I think he tells her that he does that, but I don't think he wipes all that out. So, and he's obviously got his own agenda going through the story.
Well, he's evolving though throughout the whole story too, from when you first see him at the farm all the way to the final scene where he's laying on the steps. He's a completely different character. He's not the same person. I hate to put it that way.
So interesting enough, the farm scene was supposed to be in the first movie. That was supposed to be how the original Blade Runner movie opened, was with Deckard facing a replicant at a farm right in the beginning. And they cut it for various reasons. They decided not to to go that way for various reasons. So that opening for this is pulled right out of the original script for the first one.
That's really interesting. And of course, Hampton Fancher would know that because he co-wrote both films.
Yes. Yes. He's like, I'm going to get that scene in, Dan.
Yeah. I thought the beginning. Yeah. Like you mentioned, Mike, I thought it was interesting that they, you know, they don't waste any time letting us know that Kay is replicant. And that first battle he has with the farmer echoes the battle between Harrison Ford and Rutger Hauer in some ways with the, you know, going through walls and things like that. But it's becomes clear pretty quickly that they're much more matched on a physical level.
Yeah. Well, and with Kay, we get, you know, a bigger mystery because yes, in the first 5 minutes we discover that he's replicant, but then as the plot goes on, you know, there's some serious implications that he's the child of Deckard and, I drew a blank.
Rachel.
Thank you. Yes. Which of course leads to a whole, like this opens up the Blade Runner universe much wider. I mean, the first one was a interesting take and an interesting story of, you know, a Blade Runner, sort of tracking down, these replicants with very little ramifications really. But this is like almost like a mythological, like chosen one, messiah type story almost.
Which was why I was glad that they ultimately subverted that and he's not the child, because I think it would have been too pat if he was. Although that opened up a lot of plot holes for me, or things that I'm wondering about, like why did Deckard's daughter plant that memory in Kay? Did she plant it in more replicants than him, or just him, and why?
Yeah, was she planting other memories of hers in other replicants just to, I don't know, just to do that? I don't know. That's a good question.
Because she said herself, it's not legal to put a real memory in a replicant. So that was kind of one of the hanging plot threads for me.
I got the impression, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I got the impression that like he was sort of created with her memories to throw anybody off the trail of her if they were to find out. Because like they had the two records of the two kids, and one was a female, one was a male. And I got the impression that he was like the male, and it was like, well, if they go after somebody, they're going to figure out that it's him, not her.
I thought so too, but then, you know, two people can't have identical DNA, so even if he's like a male clone of her, there would be a difference. So I thought that was just another layer of the throwing people off the track. But it is possible that he was, specifically created as a decoy. And I think it's, you know, he's supposed to be the same age. If I'm read that correctly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, but that's because he remembered the horse.
Right. Because the horse had the same day. Because we don't know how quote unquote old Kay is. We he could be 5 years old. We don't know.
Did you guys notice a shift as we talk about like the creation of these beings, these replicants, right? I remember because I saw the first one this week as well. And I actually watched the three prequels, the three short films that they created in association.
Ooh, I haven't
with
seen
this.
Those yet. Are those good?
They are good. They're worth a watch, especially if you're into the world.
I watched those two. I especially recommend the anime one, which is longer than the other two.
That one's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that one's really well done.
But there was this kind of question for me is like in the first one, they kind of indicate that these replicants are androids, right? With like very much organic androids, obviously. But this film, they kind of talked more about the bioengineering of them as opposed to. So when I think android, I immediately think like there's robotic parts, which of course makes this a lot more difficult because why couldn't they just scan them for electronic parts or something, right? But what did you guys think about that shift from like, oh, android to now bioengineered replicants?
I can definitely see what's the next step.
Yeah. In the original film, though, I think that they do seem pretty much biological. I mean, we see the person who makes their eyes. We see Sebastian with his creatures, although those are seemingly more mechanical. So I'm not sure. It does seem to be, I mean, in between the Nexus 6 that we see in the original film, there's been another generation of Nexus. Plus, there's the new replicants that Jared Leto's character is making, which are even a step beyond that. So I think there's definitely room for a couple of generations of improvements to have been made.
Yeah, the new replicants are made out of or dropping out of baggies. It was awesome. that was kind of weird. Oh, what did they microwave them and now they're done and pop them right out?
Yeah, very visually. It's one of those things that's, as a scene, visually it's amazing. But then when you think about it practicality wise, you're like, yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But, like the first one, you kind of concede just because stylistically everything just looks cool. So you're like, okay, I don't care. It looks cool.
Oh, this movie was visually stunning. Every scene, every detail in this movie, they did not get it wrong at all.
Yeah. I did see it in 3D. It was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. I jumped at a chance. Our theater, and when they do IMAX, they normally do IMAX 3D. And this time it was just IMAX 2D. So I like to get to see IMAX without sometimes the clunky 3D glasses. And it was just so amazing. It was worth every extra penny to see it just on this huge screen and just how gorgeous it is. I like that they have kind of the muted, the grays, the dystopian post-apocalyptic colors, but then like the use of the brighter colors every once in a while to just contrast it. It was just a treat to watch cinematically, even beyond like the story, just visually it was gorgeous.
Well, a lot of the brighter colors were part of the advertisements in this. And anytime you saw that, or even the hologram, she was wearing brighter colors than everybody else.
It just felt like every scene was really carefully crafted, like even though it was really long and maybe could have been cut down a little bit, it felt like every scene was there for a purpose. And they put a lot of thought and detail into crafting these scenes so that it looks gorgeous, but it means something too. So that's something I really appreciated. This is a very carefully made film, I think.
From a film standpoint, it is what I loved about it was that we got to see a science fiction film that wasn't just a blockbuster. I mean, this was almost more like an art house film in many regards.
Yeah.
And I just that's so amazing to be able to experience that with the depth of storytelling that's there and the ability to have slow moments. I know it can be, occasionally boring or the pacing might be off, but I love that aspect of it, that it can be an art house film and not a blockbuster, but with all of the technology, it was fantastic.
I'm just amazed that they were willing to give it. I think I saw its budget was like 150 and $180 million for like an R-rated movie based on more of a, sci-fi cult classic. So it's just amazing to me that they were able to have this budget and that I think they used their money wisely.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable.
And it's remarkable that they let him go like to 2 hours and 44 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
yeah.
That, I mean, usually it's like, you know, a summer movie, get it out there. We want, you know, we want as many showings as we can. And this one seems to have greater aspirations, and the studio supported it every way, which was outstanding. Yeah, I can't, I'm glad, I'm so glad they got to make it this way. Like, if we had to wait this long for a sequel, I'm glad we did, because what we got was worth it.
Oh, it was worth it, but the studio, basically, I hope they had an insurance policy on this one, because money-wise, it only made $31 million over the weekend. Do you think more people will come out the following weekends because of word of mouth, or do you think they're just counting on direct to home?
This is not a movie that gets your money back right away. The first Blade Runner wasn't, and I would be surprised if the studio actually thought that's what was going to happen. Now, you know, we'll see. I would expect that it's not going to lose enough a lot in its second week, because I think the word of mouth has been pretty good. Yeah. But and I think also, I mean, I haven't heard for sure, but I mean, this sort of does open the door for more of them. So
it almost felt like that it was almost like a launching point for a whole brand new storyline.
I think that certainly they were setting up the replicant rebellion.
Yeah. Yeah. That was introduced so late that I was like, yeah this seems like it's going to be a factor like later on.
Yeah, that's one thing I regretted a little bit, that we didn't see more of those that character who's kind of the rebel leader, Frasia. And she had been an associate of the farmer and had, you know, held Deckard and Rachel's child after she was born. I would have liked to just get a little more from her point of view, maybe.
All right. So let's talk about Deckard and Rachel's child. that's huge. I mean, that's just a huge implication. I mean, the lieutenant is right. This is like, that's something that will break the world, right? And it would, regardless of whether or not you believe that Deckard is a replicant or not. Mm-hmm. Certainly either way, it just is, it's one of those things. It's like, okay, that's pretty amazing. Now, I know that, I guess we could start with the Deckard thing, whether or not he is, and I said this on the panel, and I just believe this. The Blade Runner doesn't work for me as well if Deckard is a replicant. It just doesn't. The end scene between him and Roy doesn't work if it's two replicants. It just doesn't work as well. I like the idea of it being human versus replicant. I like there to be a human voice with the original Blade Runner movie. And I think, obviously, they don't shy away from it here. I mean, there's implications either way that he could be, but I almost feel like at this point that dodging that, like whether or not he is or not, it's kind of almost silly, because it's like, well, certainly when you're talking about the logistics of whether or not he and Rachel can have a child and the implications of that and all that, shouldn't there be like, shouldn't we know? Shouldn't Leto's character know if he is or not? I mean, there has to be some record from Tyrell that they built him as a Nexus 6. And certainly when they have him and they're questioning him, I'm like, that never comes up. And I'm kind of like, well, if he was, certainly they could just take the memories, or, you know, whatever. They could just plug him in or something, right?
I mean, there is the fact that most of the records were lost in the blackout, but they did still have those fragmentary records of Rachel. And I'm assuming at this point that there's no way he's a replicant. You know, for one thing, he aged, and we haven't seen other replicants do that.
Batista's was kind of, but like the first replicant at the farm was kind of older.
But we don't know how he started out. He could have started out that way. You know, we've
let's start out with an old replicant.
I feel at this point that it's very unlikely that Deckard is a replicant, and it wouldn't be as much of a big deal, or it would be a different kind of deal if two replicants could reproduce versus a replicant and a human.
You think it's a bigger deal if it's a human and a replicant?
I'm not sure. It's a different deal. Well, it seems to be, Robin Wright's character seems to be, you know, rightly very agitated at the idea that a human and a replicant could reproduce, because that means that they're the same in a way, whereas she needs them to be separate.
That they're biologically compatible.
Yeah. I think it's a bigger deal sociologically if a human and a replicant can procreate.
Yeah, it was interesting to see, and Robin Wright's character was in the right. God, I can't believe I said that. But basically, it was interesting because, you know, each one of them had their own view and what they wanted the child for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or what it represented. And basically, it was coming out as, you know, it could be the sign of the apocalypse. It could be the sign of a new hope. It could be, you know, all these different things. And just dependent on who you talk to. And that's why they had to put the child in hiding.
Oh, so here's another question. Is she really immunocompromised, or was that just a way to isolate her?
Good question. Good question. I was wondering the same thing. And I understand, biologically speaking, most of the time when there is some sort of hybrid birth, mm-hmm. that the immune system is quite often compromised. So I did wonder if that's another clue that Deckard is, in fact, a human. But I do think that it does, again, it does leave it open. And to those people who feel that he's a replicant, I mean, Leto's character, Wallace, actually, when he's interrogating him, talks about how it's possible, or not just possible, he believes that Deckard and Rachel were programmed to connect from the very beginning. That what they thought was, like, you know, love at first sight or what have you, was something that was programmed into both of them. That Tyrell did that.
Exactly. And that was an interesting theory, because that also wanted to make you go, maybe he is a replicant and they've been both programmed to be attracted to each other. It was interesting. I definitely will give that to you.
What do you think of these deep thoughts, Ashley?
I kind of like that they left it ambiguous and didn't definitively answer the question of whether Deckard is human or replicant. I kind of lean towards the side that he's human, because, like some of you others have said, I think the story has more impact if he is, to kind of bring, like you said, both those sides, the human and replicant perspective. But I like that they didn't definitively answer that. I think sometimes films can take away from themselves if they try to answer every single little question. I like them to tie up the story, but it's kind of interesting if they leave you with some questions to chew on as you leave the theater. And I appreciated that this film didn't necessarily, it answered some important questions, but it let you kind of think, it left some things open. Mm-hmm.
It's podcast friendly, because it gives us stuff to talk about.
Yes. And like, even
for years to come.
Like, I went to see it yesterday and I'm still thinking about it today, which is a sign of a good film for me. If I still got stuff to think about it, if I haven't forgotten about it, this is what I'm going to think about and tell other people to go see and want to go discuss it with others.
Where do you stand, Jay?
I am team human. I hope that he is human. I think it makes more sense for the storyline if he's human. And I think it also is a better through line, because ultimately, like, you have all of these characters that are trying to figure out, how do we get better technology? You have Wallace. How do we do technology better? You have people who are trying to build up barriers between replicants and humans. But the core message of this is more about, like, well, where are we at emotionally? Can we love robots? Can robots love us? Can we love AI? Can AI love us? And I think that that's a better through line than saying, like, oh, yeah, well, these two replicants who are, like, not technically human but sort of human, they're the ones that got together. It's not as powerful for that through line. So I really hope that he's a human, because I think it makes more sense for dealing with the subject matter as we progress with our own technology, you know?
Yeah, and then you're kind of watching it going, okay, well, if everybody in here is a replicant, then what does that mean for humans, really? Like, if I'm just watching this epic tale across two movies with just pretty much all replicants, like, you know, all the humans have been just cast aside.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly. But you have to remember, most of the humans have left planet. Mm-hmm. and to service the people on the, basically on the surface of Earth, all that was left were the dredges, and to keep them company, they left the replicants.
Yeah.
And I that, go ahead.
Sorry. I liked that kind of callback almost to Sebastian in the first film. He wasn't what he was too sick to leave Earth, his, you know, cause he had, you know, the premature aging disease. And we see the same thing with the daughter. She's immunocompromised. And so she couldn't go to go off world.
Yeah. And even Wallace doesn't live on Earth. He's just mm-hmm. kind of there for the weekend, trying to figure out what's going on with, he wants this kid. And you know, this offspring, and he's at, that's why he's there. But you know, the minute he can go back to off world, his real mansion house or whatever, on Mars, then I guess that's where he wants to go.
Well, it's interesting because he mentions in it that they've colonized 9 planets, and there's 9 planets, well, 8 planets, sorry, Neil deGrasse Tyson. there's 8 planets in our solar system. So, you know, does that mean they've left, the humans have left the solar system and colonized other worlds outside of it? Or, and so it was just interesting. And that's just assuming they've gone to Mars. They could have gone to some of the planets, the moons of Jupiter and colonized. They could have gone around Saturn. You know, there's so many other options. And so it was just, it was interesting, and it made me really curious to find out more about that. So it was neat to see just the little things in the speech and them talking about stuff like that. And, you know, God bless Sony Pictures, you know, and Sony itself for all the advertising it did in this movie.
Yeah. Well, you got the Sony advertisement. Of course, they didn't back off. There's bigger Atari signs than ever.
Yep, and Pan Am too.
Pan Am, yep. I also got like the product placement for Kentucky Fried Chicken, because Edward J. Olmos looks like the Colonel, like 2049. I mean, I was just like, wow. Like when he was doing the origami thing, I thought he was going to make a little chicken. Mm-hmm. He actually does in the first one. When you watch the first Blade Runner movie, when he's in the office, the first origami thing that he does make is a chicken. And I thought, wouldn't it be funny if he did that again? Because, man, I don't know. I guess it just seemed like a weird wardrobe choice. It's like, okay, Edward, we're going to have you look like, we're going to shoot in all white and make you look like the Colonel. It seemed very strange.
Yeah, there didn't seem to be, I mean, you know, he was talking completely normal English in this movie, whereas he was talking, you know, the street language. He mentioned
I think he did a couple words in lingo. But I was like, I wish that he had like talked like street like he does in the original. But because that would have been a better carryover for me.
For me too. But maybe he's just like, I'm old, I don't care anymore. I'm not gonna try.
But
the character I mean, not the actor.
Right. Well, and then of course Gaff makes a callback to Gaff. Deckard's in it, and I think the jaw dropping scene for me was the introduction or the temptation of Deckard by a new Rachel.
Yeah.
That was so well done. CG stand-in, I can't even come close to know exactly how they did it, because it looked so much better than anything like I've seen before. Like it looked better than the Rogue One stuff. It looked better than, I mean, it just looks spot on. Like she was right there.
I get that uncanny valley thing and it usually bothers me, but this was perfection.
It was so amazing.
It was almost a little eerie, just because I kept looking for, like you said, that uncanny valley moment to tip me off that this wasn't real. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't, like you said, I can't tell if this is stand-in or CGI. This is a little scary here. So,
mm-hmm. And I love Deckard's response to it.
Yeah.
Her eyes were green. And I love, and he turns his back and they just shoot the replicant right in the head. Poof.
Oh, that's brutal. It's so brutal. I mean, see your, that whole scene was, man, that was powerful.
I'm curious to hear what others thought of Deckard's appearance in the film. I thought Harrison Ford did a really nice job. You know, people have been making jokes about him now revisiting some of his most popular franchises, but I thought it seemed like he was really emotionally invested in this one, had some really nice emotional moments, some nonverbal acting, and I liked that they used him just enough, but he didn't completely take over the movie, that they let the new characters have some room to breathe. But it was good to see him, and I thought he was used well.
Right.
Yeah, it's a long time. It's like for people who, you know, for people, if people were upset about the Kingsman being like falsely marketed with having Tatum in it, like that much, and then they go to see Blade Runner, they might be really miffed. Because, yeah, he doesn't show up for a while. But I am like you. I thought that he was there when he needed to be. And I did have – it was – especially after watching the first one right before this one, I did – it didn't feel like Deckard at times. But yet I knew it was Harrison giving it his all. And he acted – I mean, he's done – I think he did a tremendous acting job. I think there are some scenes in this between him and Kay, and between certainly when he's being tortured, that I was like, I don't think I've seen Harrison like do this in a long time, like really act this well.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with what you're saying, that it didn't quite feel like Deckard, but it was definitely an excellent performance. I mean, Deckard was so non-emotional, and that was played into the whole "is he or is he not a replicant" thing, but also it's a different style of performance. It's a different style of movie. You know, they were really playing up the noir thing, even without the narration or the voiceover in the first film. It was a very kind of, you know, hard-boiled detective character.
Yeah. Well, they say being a father changes you, so maybe that's why.
Yep.
Jay, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I feel like he's trying to win the award for the worst dad of all time with all the roles that he's taking. he's kind of being typecast here.
He didn't die, which I thought was amazing. I thought, oh, surely they're just dragging him out, so, you know, he'll sacrifice himself or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, like you guys said, like, I don't think you always get a lot of emotions from Harrison Ford. You certainly get a gruff exterior, and he kind of plays with it a little bit, and we kind of love him for that, but he really seemed like he was putting himself into this role. Like, he seemed like he cared about it.
No, definitely. And it was interesting because his character in this, I fully expected him to die drowning or whatever towards the end of the movie. And it would have been like, wow, unanswered questions, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. But his role in this one, it was good. I was watching it with Judy, though. And basically, of course, she wasn't cared about what happened to Kay or what happened to Decker. She was worried about the dog in the casino.
Of course. Of course.
Well, they didn't kill the dog. Oh, they left it all alone.
It's probably an android anyway, so I doubt they could afford a real dog. Those were real bees, but not a real dog.
That was interesting that he was doing that, and I like how he said he had all that time to read.
Yeah, it's definitely a different Deckard. So I allowed for the passage of time and all that. So, yeah, I could, you know, it was weird because like when he replayed Han Solo in Force Awakens, it felt like Han Solo. I was like, oh, my God, look at him. He's getting right back into the role. This feels like Han Solo again. And I didn't feel that way with this one. Not to say that he did a bad job, but it was a little bit different character. And yeah, I guess, you know, I can allow for that because of the time, because of everything that's happened, that he would be a somewhat different character. So, and, you know, I know that we're getting running short of time, but I have to say that I think Ryan Gosling does a phenomenal job in this movie. I don't think I used to really respect him very much. I can't really recall seeing him in much else before Nice Guys last year. And I love Nice Guys so much that it made me not hate the idea that he was in this. And so, and he really didn't disappoint me in this. I thought he was excellent in this movie.
Oh, I thought he was too. He was believable as someone with not that much emotion. It was awesome. And it was the way his interaction with the hologram was amazing. And the scene, the lovemaking scene was awesome.
Yeah.
But that was too. And, but also, you know, the scene where he's with, where he first meets the memory maker, who he doesn't know who she is yet, but when he cracks, and that scene, I thought he was really powerful in. I mean, she's got tears coming down her cheek, but now we know really why. But he just cracks, and I just thought that was really well done. That's you don't see a lot of, especially like high-end, you know, studio movies having those kind of acting moments in movies. And that was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah,
think, you know, for, especially, you know, for a replicant character to show that kind of growth, I think, you know, it takes a very subtle performance, and I think he did a great job.
What was your standouts in this? Who were your standout characters?
I thought that Sylvia Hoeks as Love was outstanding to me. Just because, I mean, she had this quiet demeanor about her where she's like, I'm going to please my master no matter what. And then she would have these tears stream down her face when she was doing something that she kind of was maybe emotionally compromised on. I just thought that she brought a lot to that role. That was cool.
She was great.
Yeah. I like the way they kind of visually styled her a bit like Rachel too, with the bangs and the kind of, you know, uniforms that she wore at first. That was an interesting callback. Yeah, I thought she was really good. And I thought, you know, even though we only really get one scene with Anna, the daughter, she really stood out to me. You know, if I had not knowing at the time, I still thought that, oh, this is a pretty special character.
Yeah, I think that's a true credit to the movie, too, because the movie is full of really cool characters. So she doesn't really stand out like in a. If they hadn't done their job with a lot of other sub characters, then she might have really stood out, and you'd be like, I think she's really something, right? But instead, right, you've got all these other characters that are pretty well rounded and interesting, and so she's just another interesting character, and that that's something that carries over from the first movie, because the first movie has tons of great performances by great characters, great character actors.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, let's go ahead and rate this movie. We could keep talking about this, folks. We have to cut it off somewhere. 1 out of 5 stars, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. All right, Jay, you go first this time.
Am I allowed to say 4.75?
Sure.
I would say it's fantastic, it's amazing, and I think you should go see it, especially if you like sci-fi.
Okay. Are you going to go see it in the movies again or just wait till video?
I think I'll wait till video because I honestly, like, on a screen that long, a showing that long, I get a little antsy in the theater. But if I'm at home and I can stop it and leave and come back to it and like put on the subtitles so I don't I don't miss anything, it makes me just a little bit more comfortable.
Okay. Understandable. Felicity.
I would give it a 4 out of 5, but kind of rounding up that 4. It did feel overlong, and I did think there were some plot holes, but I thought on the whole, you know, it's certainly visually stunning. All the performances are great. I would, you know, overall definitely recommend it. And I think I would like to see it in the theater again, because I saw just a regular presentation of it. I didn't see it in 3D or in IMAX. And I think it probably would gain something out of seeing it in that format.
Yeah, just send Kevin to an 80s concert. You can go see this movie again.
We'll find something for him to do.
Exactly. All right, Ashley.
I'm going to go with a very solid 4.5. Just really enjoyed this one. Interestingly, it wasn't on my most anticipated movies for the year, but is actually now one of my favorite movies of the year. I'm almost a little hesitant to go back and see it because it felt like seeing it in IMAX for the first time was just a perfect experience. But I'm definitely going to own this one on DVD. Really enjoyed it. Was very pleased with it. And big thumbs up from me.
That's awesome. All right, Mr. Mike.
Well, the original Blade Runner 1982 gets a 5 for me, and that's no question there. So this one had its work cut out for it, and I am amazed at how close it comes. It doesn't get a 5. It's really close. I would say, 4-something, and that's to be determined later, because I definitely want to see it again. I, like you guys, I don't know if I can see it again as I get older. Like, I had to make my own intermission during this movie, so there's about 5 minutes that I didn't see, so now I have to see what happened there exactly. But I look forward to it, and there's enough there that it's really meaty, it's really deep. It does sort of satisfy my lack of any Westworld on right now. So I get to use those same muscles in the brain. I thought the performances were good. And look, if this movie's not an Oscar contender, somebody at the Academy is sleeping, because I really think that this should be. I think this is a case where they shouldn't handicap the movie because of the genre.
Interesting. I could definitely agree with that.
I would vote, I would tell you that I would give Harrison a supporting actor award for this.
Wow.
It might be one of the best performances he's done.
Wow. Better than Get Off My Plane. Okay. Got it.
Well, he doesn't quite have the catchphrases, but, you know.
All right. For me, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to do a solid 4. Doing a solid 4 because I left the theater feeling very depressed. I do that, though, most of the times when I watch a dystopian film. And this was true dystopia at its best. And the world is pretty much destroyed, and humanity has ruined the planet with, nuclear war or battles and using all the resources up, and of course the rising seas. They built the walls to stop the ocean from coming into Los Angeles, and it's just amazing to see what happened to San Diego. It's now a junkyard.
And yeah, that was probably the most depressing part.
Oh yeah. And to see those giant garbage trucks, basically the floating ones, just dropping. And but the scenery in this was just amazing. In those garbage scenes, though, you saw garbage piles and stuff, and you saw little tiny people moving around in the piles, scavenging. And it was just amazing. There was not, like I said earlier, no scenes were overlooked. No special effects were wasted. It was amazing. And I was really amazed to see it. So I definitely think a solid 4. For special effects, it would have been a 10 for me. But, with story, I think they could have cut down a little bit. It went a little bit too long for me. I could have seen this easily like a 2-hour and 15-minute movie instead of 2 hours and 45 minutes. There's just certain things I didn't think we needed to see. I can't tell you what, though. That's the problem. And, I might go see it again, like as a matinee, and I can't do 3D, so I might just go see IMAX if I can. But, definitely it'll be added to my collection, but it won't be one I will be watching all the time, just because I don't want to get depressed again. But we definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what you thought. We definitely want to hear from you. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment with the Con Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the new Star Wars Last Jedi trailer. Now, I am super, super excited for the new Star Wars film. Like, pumped beyond belief. The new trailer looks awesome. We got a good look at all the main characters. We got to hear Luke speak, finally. And we got to see the newest cute little moneymaker that's going to probably be tons of toys for Disney. All the scenes were, of course, out of order and can be taken with a grain of salt until we actually see the film. But holy cow, all the thoughts and feels going around in my head right now about this film. Also, the video of Carrie Fisher's dog watching the trailer was super sweet and just tear-jerking for me. I know I'm ready for December and to see a new Star Wars film, and I'm sure all of you are too. So if you really want to see it when it comes out, I would suggest getting your tickets now because they went on sale like yesterday. So I would check that out before all the movie theaters are sold out. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out. I'm not a robot without emotions.
I'm not what you see. Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Well, we're not quite at the countdown to Halloween just yet. We're going to start that officially next week. But right now I need to, as part of the Con Report, we definitely want to let you know about a show that's happening real soon. It's called HalloCon. It's a celebration of all things Halloween. It's happening October 27th through the 29th in East Ridge, Tennessee. And we've got Joe here to talk all about it. Welcome to the station, Joe.
Thank you, guys. It's an honor to be on Earth Station One. I've heard a lot about you and a lot of your Doctor Who reports.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much for that. That's really cool. I know we ran into you just recently at Monsterama. Was that a good show for you?
It was a decent show. It was a decent show. I've also talked with y'all at the great Wholanta show.
Yes. That's one of our favorites.
I was the guy that had the Weeping Angel up on the table that moved its head.
Nice. So, yeah, you definitely know about all things creepy.
Scared the hell out of me.
Well, tell us about HalloCon.
HalloCon. Well, we're a 15-year-old convention, East Ridge, which is actually the Chattanooga, Tennessee area. So, you know, so people can actually find us on the map. Look for Chattanooga, and we're right on the state line of Georgia and Tennessee. Been around 15 years. We got a Halloween. We mainly do a lot of authors, but this year we brought in Santiago Cirilio, if you've heard of him. He was one of the actors on The Walking Dead.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, he's one of our guests this year. Little quick rundown of our guest list. Our master of the ceremony for our opening ceremonies is one Will Rogers. He wrote a book called The Ultimate Super Friends Companion Guide, chronicling all the episodes of the Super Friends cartoon series. Our next guest, and he's our author guest of honor, Jeremy Hicks. He wrote The Cycle of Ages saga, Finders Keeper. And then he's got a new book out called Delve Deep, which is a great book from what I understand. Our artist of distinction who created our wonderful graphic that you'll see on our website is Colonel Fritz Fotovich from Huntsville, Alabama. Great guy. He is a character and a half and an artist that just can't be believed. Of course, Santiago, we got a science author. She's actually a true rocket scientist from NASA, Stephanie Osborne. She wrote the great book, Burnout, The Mystery of Space Shuttle STS-281. Great book. I highly recommend that. Author Bobby Nash. You guys know Bobby, don't you?
That hack? Oh boy, I tell you what.
I've heard the name once or twice. Where did I hear that thing before? Where did we hear that?
We love Bobby.
Yeah. I guess my credit just went way down, huh?
Well,
you could slum with the best of them. It's okay.
Exactly. We thank you for giving him something to do over the weekend.
And then we got Alexander Brown, Alexander S. Brown. He's the author. He's written the book Terentia Falls, which just scared the snot out of me. Taylor S. Hodge, who was a, she's a young teen author, but she's also known in Europe as a musical artist. BBC picked up and played one of her CDs one time, and she spent 6 months in Europe touring because they played one song. Then we got Amy Petulia. She's the author of a book about the Corpsewood murders in Northwest Georgia area back in 1986. She also runs the Chattanooga Ghost Tours up here. Jen Mulville, she's an author. Tamara Lowry, she writes a lot of the pirate stories. KT Hunter and T.D. Ralston.
And that's a pretty full list. A lot of authors. So how would you categorize this convention? It seems very author heavy.
Yeah, we're author heavy. We're classified as a literary convention. I'm the new director of the convention, or chairman. Directors run departments. I'm the chairman. I got to get used to saying that.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah. Our founder retired last year, and I've taken over. And I'm expanding the market a little bit, trying to draw in a younger crowd. That's where we went with Santiago. We got some good guests lined up for next year, but you got to come to Halicon to find out who those are. Hint, hint. And, you know, that's pretty much, like I said, we've been around 15. This is our 15th anniversary.
Awesome. And now, the card that I have, the promo card, says it presents the late night double feature picture show. Do you guys do screen horror movies or like late night cult movies or?
Well, we will run a 42-year-old cult movie at midnight on Saturday night that has a lot of audience participation.
Gotcha. Participation? Is that right?
Yeah, you got to say it with a little anticipation.
Gotcha. Maybe some dancing involved. Very nice.
Yeah, some almost Doctor Who wibbly wobbly time warping type dancing.
Very nice. That's very cool. Any other events that you guys that you guys have as part of the weekend as well?
Oh, Lord, we got to run four tracks to get everything in. Well, the big, you know, what we really are proud of is one of the things that we do that not many other conventions do is we don't schedule any programming at dinner time. You know why?
Because you like to eat.
Because we like to eat and we like to feed people. So Friday night at 7 o'clock, we serve fresh cooked hamburgers and hot dogs that were cooked on site. How does that sound?
That's very nice. So it's like it's got a real cookout family feel to it.
Yeah, and it's actually called the cookout dinner. Then Saturday at lunch, we provide lunch. It's called the picnic. That is two pieces of bread with stuff between it and a Ziploc bag. Not these little finger sandwiches you see at convention conflict. We're talking two hands to eat the sandwich. That sounds
very
good,
nice.
Huh?
Yeah, very nice.
And then our favorite thing is Saturday night at 6 o'clock, we serve what's called feast. Feast is two meat, four veggies, a salad, piece of cake, and all your beverages are included all weekend.
Wow. You know, Mike, I'm just really that now I'm really glad to know that at least for one weekend, Bobby will be fed pretty well.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Unless the authors are the meal. I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that. What kind of meat are we talking about?
Beef and pork.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Bobby's perfect in there then.
Yeah, we also offer just wash my tongue, can't do nothing with it. We have a vegetarian menu also for those that don't partake in, what was it I heard little Miley Cyrus say? If it had a pulse, I don't eat it.
Gotcha.
We take care of those people. But something that I'm starting this year is that at midnight on Friday night, midnight, we have a Cards Against Humanity tournament.
Oh, that sounds insane.
Yeah, we're actually going to offer a cash prize for the person with the most cards after an hour and a half.
Wow. Well, very nice. This sounds really fun.
Oh, it's absolutely fun. Saturday, we have a lot of gaming going on. You'd have to actually go to our website, which is actually www.halocon.com. And, you know, check out our full schedule. We've got, like I said, there's 13 authors or 13 guests. I think I've got 8 fan programming things. You know, I got 13 pros, 8 fan guests. There is so much going on that probably by Sunday afternoon when we close down, you're going to go, man, I wanted to go do that, but I had so much fun doing this.
That's a good problem to have.
We're really pushing a big, exciting convention for everybody. We're even working up right now some children's programming.
Very nice. Well, I definitely encourage everybody out there to check out halocon.com and look at the schedule, look at the guests, look at the programming. You can still reserve rooms. Is that cool? Yes?
Yeah. Still could reserve rooms. I think I'm going to try to get that extended tomorrow.
Awesome.
until at least Sunday. Rooms are $79 a night. Your badges online are $55. That goes until Sunday. You know, it just gives us enough time to, on Sunday the 15th, that gives us roughly 12 days to compile all the information from all the people, print the badges, get them laminated and all that. But, you know, so we're going to have to shut down registration on the 15th. But other than that, yeah, everything else you can do online. Rooms are $79 a night. You go to the hotel page, click book your room here. And this is one thing I got to tell people when you book your room, to reset the date to the 27th to the 29th. Our room block is from the 26th to the 30th. If you don't change the date and click update before you choose your room, you just booked 4 nights.
Oh, you overbooked. Yeah, got it.
So make sure you do that. But other than that, we look forward to seeing everybody. It's going to be a blast. And I will do my best to walk around and shake everybody's hand that's there, because I'm so grateful that they came.
Awesome. Well, definitely. I know that meeting you at Monsterama was a treat, and I know that this show is going to be a good one. So I encourage everybody to go check that out. Again, go to halocon.com to find out more information. Thank you so much for joining us, Joe. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Joe. We'll be sure to send everybody to HaloCon in near Chattanooga at the end of October. I want to backtrack just a little bit, because we did have a appearance last weekend at the sort of quarterly Atlanta Comic Convention that's right here in Atlanta, the Atlanta Comic Convention. It is at the Marriott Century Center. Still, and it's a one-day show, and it's fantastic. It's a great show. I almost felt like going there this weekend, I hadn't been there for a while. It just seemed kind of like, wow, I'm surprised at how many people were there. I just it's a good vibe still. There's a lot of new faces in the Artist Alley section, which is nice to see. A lot of familiar faces, too. Touch base with some friends of the station. I got to see... some really cool artwork that I, like I said, some new artists that I hadn't, and I wish I'd gotten cards, and I was going to get cards and I was going to talk about them, but, I failed. So sorry. They're going to do another ACC in December. So I'm hoping that a lot of those people will be back. I will say though, that it was kind of surprising that the kid from Stranger Things that was there, he didn't really seem to be having a lot of people at his table. So I think that, I thought he would be more popular than, that, but, Maybe that was before I got there, because I did get there a little bit around one or so, and I know that for the first couple hours, that place is usually a madhouse. So,
oh, it always is.
Yeah. So, because as a matter of fact, when I was walking in, there must have been about 40 people that were walking out, and I was like, "Wow, is everybody leaving? Like, what is there, like a fire hazard or something?" And I was kind of surprised to see that many people leaving. But caught up with the good friend of the station, Bill Jourdain. He's got, of course, working with Asgard Press on some 2018 calendars. Of course, he usually contributes to the DC vintage calendar that they do every year. And this year, some big news that way. There's actually going to be four calendars that are DC related. There's the normal DC vintage covers that he helps do the copy for. That's still being printed. But they're also doing a special calendar for vintage Superman, vintage Batman, and vintage Wonder Woman. And he had the Superman one and the Batman one on hand. And I looked at the Batman one, and it's just gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. And Bill writes all the copy for it. And he knows Batman, at least Golden Age Batman, better than anybody else I know. And just a worthy book. So I consider it a book, even though it's a calendar. I mean, I still keep them every year because I have a stack of them because they're just gorgeous. So definitely go to Asgard Press to find out more information about those calendars. I'll have a link in the show notes. But it's always good to see him. It was good to dig through the back issues and see some new folks. So definitely had a good time. I know, Mike, you were really busy and you couldn't come as scheduled. But so there wasn't a lot of Funko figures sold because Mike wasn't there. So I think all the Funko figures were dealers were just kind of upset and wondering where Mike was.
I heard a deep sigh from the South. It was okay.
Met up with our good friend of the station, Gary Mitchell. He was there. We did some shopping and then we went out for some Fellini's Pizza afterwards. It was nice hanging out with him. Just a good vibe. Like I said, it's a good show. There's a lot of friends there. It just feels like a family gathering of sorts. Very cool. So there will be another one in December. I don't have the exact dates, but as soon as they announce them, I will add them to the con report. So so people can check it out. And then that's just in time to do your holiday shopping. So so that'll be really awesome. Or to spend money that you should spend on holiday gifts. Not a lot of other shows coming up in October. Of course, we're all geared up for Halloween. There's a lot of events happening. So I definitely, I know that our good friends, the Casket Creatures, will be performing all month long. So I definitely encourage people to check out their website and find out all the places they're playing. In fact, one of the places that they're playing is Sweetwater, the Sweetwater Bar, which is right near me. So I will be catching that show. And of course, Ricky and Bambi put on their Halloween show at Galactic Quest. So I'll get the date on that and let people know about that. There will be Comic Fest, Halloween Comic Fests around the country at local comic shops. So I know that I'll be attending the one here. But since Halloween itself is on a Wednesday, then so yeah, most of the stores will be doing it over the weekend. So you'll have to check with your local comic shop to find out exactly when they're going to be celebrating Comic Fest, because you don't want to miss out on those free Halloween comics. But that's all all in October. November, I will be at Heroes and Villains. I'm looking at going on the Saturday, the 18th, spending the day there, but it is November 18th and 19th. So I hope to see you guys there when I'm there, but it is a 2-day event. So if you are going to go, just be careful. Like if you're going to go downtown to the World Congress Center, then you want to make sure that there's not a Falcons game, because that could really mess you up. So if you're planning on going the 19th, I'm going to have to check to see if there's a Falcons, if the Falcons are home that weekend. Because if they are, that's going to make things very difficult to navigate around. So anyway, I'm planning to go and hang out, so I hope to see some people there. And the weekend after that is November 24th to the 26th. That is the Chicago TARDIS, the awesome Doctor Who-related convention that's been going on in Chicago for decades. It's a long-standing tradition of folks there to celebrate Doctor Who every year. They've got some great guests, and you can also check out Nathan Laws from the 42 cast here on the ESO Network. He will be attending that, and he loves saying howdy to listeners and would-be listeners as well. So go out there and give a shout out to Nathan. Those are the conventions that we've got. If you have a convention like Joe has at HalloCon and want to promote it and come on and talk about it for a little bit, please reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. I wanted to thank our crew for being here and our guests, of course. Let's, of course, thank Miss Ashley. You did it again, a stellar job. And thank you for everything you do for the network.
Oh, thank you. It is always a pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about?
Just that I've got my review of Blade Runner 2049 up on the ESO podcast website. So if you want to go check that out, and there's also lots of other great podcasts and reviews out there. So be sure to support everybody involved with the ESO network.
That is awesome. All right. Felicity, thank you, of course.
Thank you. It was great to be here again. And great to talk Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
I know I spoke up during the panel at Dragon Con quite a bit. So
yeah, I was going to say, it's like, I almost felt like, come on up, come on to the seat, take a seat. So what do you think you're going to shout out about?
I'm going to be at Long Island Who. This is going to be my first time going to this convention, but I have a lot of friends who are involved in that. And that's the weekend of November 10th. I'm looking forward to that.
That's awesome. It's a great, great con. And there's going to be a lot of, you know, Doctor Who guests there. So it's definitely worth checking out. It's one I've always wanted to go to, but it's such a long drive out to Stony Brook. It really is.
Yeah, fortunately, Long Island is not too tricky for us because we can just drive down through Connecticut and hop on the ferry.
Oh, that's true. You don't have to go all the way from down to the city and then out.
Right.
Oh, that's easy. Luckies. Well, very cool. And Jay, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Want to plug something?
Yeah. So you can actually hear the Story Geeks podcast. I'm the host of the Story Geeks podcast. You can catch us on any social media pretty much by just typing in hashtag the Story Geeks, and you can find it. We're in the midst of a Star Wars series. We're diving deep into all of the Star Wars films. And coming up soon, we actually have a top 10 comic book movies of all time where we actually read. Some of the ESO Network folks submitted their top 10, so we actually read those out in that podcast. So check all those things out.
Yeah, they actually get people that actually write them. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, sir. I love your podcast. I love listening to it every week.
Oh, thank you.
And Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about?
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to a friend of the station, Randall Bishop. He actually, I saw him at ACC. I know we talked about ACC a little bit earlier in the show, and wanted to just give him a shout out. He has just released issue 5 of his comic series, Hawk of New York, and congratulations on that. It's a great read. So I'm hoping that everybody will go pick that up. He actually is also selling all the issues in bundles. So there'll be a link to his site on the show notes. So you can just go there, check out Hawk of New York. You can get the comics themselves. There's music that Randy's done, music with some of really good friends of the station as well, like Radio Cult and other folks. And so you can get music that's based on inspired by the comic as well. And check it out. I definitely think it's worthy.
That is awesome. Definitely worth checking out. All right, my shout out is going out to you at home. Yes, folks, I am going to do a little bit of a pleading and begging. well, not really begging and pleading, but we want you. That's right. ESO is about to start hiring people. We are going to be looking for bloggers. That's right, folks. If you've always wanted to do a blog, have you always wanted to have a writing itch or have a, you know, column that you want to talk about, or just want to do something where you're ranting and raving every week about some of your favorite topics, we are looking for bloggers here on the network, and we are going to be expanding our reach on our podcast, and we will, you know, are looking for folks to submit samples at esopodcast@gmail.com. And, you know, please, we are looking for somebody who wants to write for us weekly, biweekly, twice a month, three times a month, even, you know, if you want to do once a month. If you have a column that you have an idea for, if you have it elsewhere and you want to also get more of an audience because we have a pretty good following up on the station, you know, please definitely give me a ring, you know, write me and say, hey, Mike, here's my column. Take a look at it. You know, we definitely are looking to expand our reach, and we have a couple that are going to be starting in the next couple weeks. And, you know, we want to go more. We want people to, you know, get out there, and, you know, we want to help you expose yourself. Well, let me rephrase that. We don't want you exposing yourself on our website. We just want you to help promote you. That's it. Let's have you pre-promoted here on ESO. Whew, that was a close one. Speaking of close ones, we are going to be back again next week. And Mike, we are finally getting to our Halloween episodes. So, what are we talking about next week, Mr. Mike?
Next week, we are doing our ESO book review, but this time with a spooky twist. We are actually reviewing the original Bram Stoker classic, Dracula. And we've got a great crew to do that with. Of course, Kirby will be back with us and some other friends. And we are going to have a descendant from Bram Stoker join us for the podcast as well. It's going to be very, very exciting.
Is he going to be in the geek seat? Maybe. Could be.
Maybe. You Ooh. Know. That's exactly.
Ooh, spooky. Ha, ha, ha.
The geek seat is hungry because it didn't get fed this week.
That's true.
Yeah. So we're going to have to appease it somehow.
Exactly. So let's make that geek seat happy, because if not, it comes after us.
Yeah. No, we've already done our time.
Yeah, I know. I have the rope marks still. You were going, hey, Mike, here's this idea I have. It's called the Geek Seat. Want to take a seat? And then, like an idiot, I said, sure. And I've been stuck ever since.
Yeah, 7 years later, still wake up in a cold sweat.
Oh, exactly. But, of course, folks, we definitely, you know, thank you guys for listening. As always, you could leave feedback for us at esopodcast@gmail.com. Or if, like we said, send writing samples. We definitely are looking for bloggers. And, of course, call us if you want to just leave feedback for us or have ideas for our shows, anything like that. 404-963-9057. Okay, folks, we are out of here, and we will see you next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace. And we're done.
Yay!
You've been listening to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
Art and love so strange, said you never knew. While I try my best to cover
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.